Sounds True presents Insight Meditation, Tape 7, a talk on delusion with Sharon Salzberg.
In the last tape, we discussed the laws of nature that are discovered in every moment's experience, that is, impermanence and unsatisfactoriness and insubstantiality or essencelessness. The reason that we don't see these truths in any given moment is the force of delusion in the mind. I'd like to talk now about delusion. Delusion is a state of not realizing what it is that we actually do know, not realizing what it is that we don't know, and not knowing how to ask the right questions. In fact, it's a state of not having the spark or the energy, the interest in asking questions at all. Delusion is a state of failing to see things as they actually are, being out of touch, unable to discover the truth of things, the laws of nature in any given moment. The word in Pali is moha, which means to be stupefied. We can experience it as confusion, as bewilderment, as dullness, as helplessness. It's a state of ignoring the essential nature of our lives. Because with delusion, we have ignorance, we have this feeling, this sense of not understanding. There also comes worry and hesitancy. There comes uncertainty. Often the way that we respond to that worry and that confusion is by clinging to views, having a very rigid mind, a mind of very certain opinions about things, even a mind of dogmatism or fanaticism or conceit. It's as though when we're lost in delusion, we begin to look for security anywhere. The example that's often used to describe delusion is like being out somewhere in the wilderness in a storm. If we're out in the storm and we can find anything to hold on to, anything at all, we'll hold on to it very tightly. In that howling wind, in those exposed elements, we'll cling tenaciously, rigidly, to anything that we can find, and we'll refuse to relinquish it, because our sense of safety seems to depend upon holding on very tightly to what seems to be offering us some shelter. Delusion has the characteristic of not knowing what's going on. It functions to conceal the true nature of what is happening in this moment, and it manifests as darkness. The feeling is the same feeling that we get, I'm sure you've had it, it's that feeling of driving down a road somewhere and suddenly not knowing where you are. You think, am I in California? Am I in Massachusetts? Did I already make that turn onto Route 122? Am I still on Route 202? Where am I? We're very confused. That fog is delusion. In the Buddhist teaching, it said that delusion is ignorance, and this cloud of ignorance is the root of all suffering states of mind. If we look inside any of the hindrances, for example, if we look inside grasping, we look inside attachment, we look inside anger, somewhere in there will be the force of delusion. They're always linked with delusion and grounded in delusion. They're produced by delusion and produce still more delusion in the mind. There's a very strong mutual reinforcement going on there. As we pursue objects or things or people or experiences with the hope that they'll provide us with permanent, everlasting, abiding pleasure, as we run away from objects, people, experiences, as though we could keep anything from ever hurting us or causing us pain, then we're reinforcing delusion. Another way of saying this is that to not see a situation clearly, to not have right understanding, to be lost and in delusion will always bring some amount of disharmony and pain. What we call unwise attention, not being mindful, not paying careful attention, gives rise to a certain quality of perception which attributes to the experience or the object of the moment a quality that it actually may not possess. So, for example, under the influence of desire, of attachment, of longing, what we see might look very, very good. It looks very promising, like it's going to give us a lot, maybe like it's going to give us everything. And who amongst us has not been infatuated with somebody only to look back 2 years later, a year later, 6 months later, to say, what was that about? But at the time, under the influence of that desire, all possibility seemed centered upon that being, all possibility for our own happiness. Under the influence of delusion, what we see appears to be permanent rather than impermanent, to be substantial rather than insubstantial, and to be secure rather than to be insecure. This process is very fast, it's very swift, and it's very subtle. We have latent tendencies of grasping, holding on, or aversion, pushing away, delusion, getting spaced out, getting lost. And these give rise to a very distorted perception where we can't see things very clearly. Under the influence of these mind states, our mind is remodeling what is going on according to our own needs or our own fears or our own views, whatever's strongest in the moment. Often we can't see this remodeling, this shaping of reality, this shaping of our cognition. So we take what we perceive to be happening as a completely faithful replica of the truth, which in fact it might not be at all, depending upon the degree of mindfulness that's present. You know how it is if you're filled with fear and you're walking down the street, then every shadow can seem to hold a lurking menace. If we're very angry, we don't find this to be a very enjoyable world. If you wake up in the morning and you're very angry, and you go to breakfast someplace, you're probably not going to find it very pleasing. If we're feeling a lot of greed, the mind will fasten on different objects like glue. It will exaggerate their possible pleasure. Our fantasy of what they can offer will often far outweigh anything they actually can offer. When there's strong delusion in the mind, there's a lot of cloudiness, there's a lot of fogginess, and so it's very, very easy to misinterpret what's happening in several significant ways. Because of delusion, there's often a lot of restlessness and perplexity in our minds. We feel very unsettled in our own minds, like we don't belong there somehow. It's like we're inhabiting something strange. When delusion is strong, we don't tend to experience things in a very integrated way, but rather we experience things in a puzzling array of pieces that don't seem to fit together. We can't quite get how things are connected, how they're related, how they're interrelated, how they belong, how we belong. The way that our attention is biased by grasping or aversion or delusion has a very profound effect. The psychologist William James once said, "My experience is what I agree to attend to. Only those items I notice shape my mind." One of the major consequences of delusion in particular as a force in the mind is that it creates a certain blindness to context. Whereas some vision of context, some sense of context, is actually essential for a full and complete mindfulness. In the Buddhist teaching, we call this clear comprehension, or sampajanya. in Pali. So, for example, one of the Buddha's recommendations in terms of right speech was to try to say that which is truthful and that which is useful. When he urged people to try to speak the truth, to be honest, he didn't seem to mean that we should go around blurting out to everybody exactly what we think of them, but to find that which is useful as well as that which is truthful. To have that degree of sensitivity and discernment, to say that which is true and that which is useful, we have to have a certain sense of clear comprehension. We have to look carefully. We have to look in context. We have to be able to see something as completely and distinctly as possible, to know many aspects of what's going on and to know them for ourselves. It's not comprehension in an intellectual or removed or abstract sense. To know deeply, we really have to be able to look at things as they're arising in the moment, in all of their tenderness and all of their newness, and see that new reality that's getting created in each moment. That means we have to have the openness and the spaciousness to see it in the midst of context. We can hear a statement like, heroin is a very dangerous drug, and undoubtedly that's true. But is it necessarily as true for someone who's terminally ill and in excruciating pain? What's the context of the reality of the moment? If we can look in that way, then we can find the world anew all of the time. We're not held to rigid categories. A very clear and deep perception of the truth of reality is not context-free. It incorporates the matrix out of which things are arising. And yet in delusion, we can easily make the mistake of clinging to the view that something has a kind of inherent reality. It is substantial. It's absolutely true apart from the conditions within which it's arising. And that's just not so. If we lose the context, we lose all of the intensity and the richness of the relatedness, the connectedness of that moment. One summer when Joseph and I were on our way to the Soviet Union, we were staying in a hotel in London. In the middle of the night, unbearably enough, about 3 a.m, the fire alarm went off, and it was incredibly loud. Joseph was in the next room, and I bolted out of bed, and I thought, what should I do? I had just sprained my ankle. I was using a cane. We were up on the 6th floor, and I knew I couldn't take the elevators because it was a fire alarm. I'd have to go down the stairs. I thought quickly, what should I take? What should I do? I kept waiting for the fire alarm to stop, and it didn't stop. And I said, okay. And I just grabbed my passport. I left the cane. I left everything I owned, and I went downstairs. It was amazing being down there. There were about 500 people down in the lobby. It was an enormous hotel. And it was amazing to see that people had grabbed all different things. They'd taken different items. I'd taken my passport. Joseph had taken his passport and his discourse notes. There were people down there who were literally half naked. There were women down there wearing white gloves and pearls. It was like some kind of deranged tea party, something out of Alice in Wonderland to be down in that lobby. Everybody was somehow reflecting what they cared about the most in this emergency situation. Everybody was seeing the world through their own tunnel vision at that moment of crisis. I stood there, 3 a.m, thinking, this is life. This is incredible. It's really like that all of the time. When we walk around in delusion in that kind of cloud, because we're paying attention to so little, we experience mostly tunnel vision, and we don't see this incredible array of possibility, of relativity. The more narrow our vision gets, the more we need things to be a certain way in order to feel secure. We lose all of that sense of adventure and discovery simply because we're not paying attention. It's the quality of our awareness that will determine the level of delusion or the level of insight, and this is very important. There was a very controversial experiment done once in which the subjects were asked to participate in research on the effects of punishment and learning. Each time the person who was supposed to be learning didn't know the answer to a certain question, the people taking the role of the teachers were supposed to administer a mild electric shock. Really, there were no shocks being administered, but the people didn't know that. They thought that this is what they were really doing. And apparently there was even a tape played of moans and groans and some convincing noises of distress, so that the people playing the role of the teachers would feel that they really were administering the shock. These people were asked to increase the intensity of the shock at every error, so it just kept going up and up. The completely astonishing finding was that about 65% of these nice, normal people, just like you and me, under this instruction, delivered enough current to kill the learner. This is a very complex finding. But one of the powerful things about it seems to be how important the incremental nature of the action was. If those people in the experiment had been asked from the beginning to administer enough electric shock to kill somebody, probably very few would have done it. What seems to happen when we take a small step, and then another small step, and then another small step, is that we lose sight of the whole picture. We don't necessarily have that kind of bigger vision. After the first step, we don't pay a lot of attention until maybe we've gone a long way down a certain road. And then we look back and we say, "This isn't the road I meant to come down. What happened?" This is quite unwitting. This is quite unintentional. It's incredible to see how far down the road we can actually get. And it's not because we're bad people. It's not because 65% of us are ready to kill at a moment's notice. It's because we don't pay attention. We're deluded. We're lost. We're lost in a cloud. We're lost in a stupor. We're lost in our own tunnel vision. That's why mindfulness is considered to be the root of all morality, of all integrity in life. Being able to pay attention and to be mindful. It's interesting that contemporary psychological research shows that people can sometimes be seething with reaction, and that's measured by their physiological responses, and even then they can be oblivious to their emotions. They may not be aware of negative emotions such as anger or anxiety, things that are difficult to face, difficult to feel, even though their hearts are racing, their blood pressure is climbing, and they're sweating. It's said, in terms of the research, that about 1 person in 6 seems to show this pattern. And perhaps related to this as well is an inability to empathize, an inability to register another's feelings, to attune emotionally. And yet empathy is the root of caring. Because we know how someone will suffer if we do or say a certain thing, we don't do it. Quite naturally, in a very heartfelt and simple way. Research says that, as a rule of thumb, about 90% or more of an emotional message is communicated nonverbally. It takes place in someone's tone of voice, in their gestures, in their posture, or in a telling silence rather than in words. But if we're deluded, if we're spaced out, we'll miss it all. There's a story from the Buddha's time about one of the monks who felt that he couldn't possibly keep, in fact, he couldn't even remember all of the 227 vows of a monk. He went to the Buddha and he said that. And the Buddha said in response to him, "Can you remember one thing?" The monk said he thought he could do that. And the Buddha said, "Then just be mindful." That's at the heart, it's at the root of all good action, of all purity. It's the ability to pay attention, to connect, to be sensitive, to realize what is going on in context, fully, without being lost in our own grasping, aversion, or delusion. When we live in delusion and we don't understand that what we care about and how we act will have consequences, that doesn't mean that they won't have consequences. In fact, it means that they're going to have worse consequences. There's a very interesting teaching in the Buddhist psychology that says that if we do something harmful or hurtful, if we do something that's motivated by grasping or aversion, and we do it not knowing that it's unskillful, if there's ignorance in there as well, then the result, the karmic result of that action is worse than if we were to do it knowing that it was wrong or knowing that it was harmful. That's quite different than the conditioning most of us have had growing up, which is more something like, well, you knew better, and because you knew better and you did it anyway, then that makes it 10 times worse. The Buddha actually was talking in very pragmatic terms about how the mind works. He was saying that if we do something and we don't understand how much it harms us or how much it hurts others, then we really abandon ourselves into that action. There's no hesitancy. There's no pulling back from it at all. The full force of the power of our minds is going into that action. Ignorance or delusion is also planting a seed, along with whatever greed or anger is motivating the action to begin with. And so we feel the consequences of all of that intensity, the wholeness of our being thrown into some activity. Whereas if we do something and we know it's wrong, there's that moment of wanting to do it, there's that moment of pulling back and hesitating and feeling a kind of conscience and a sensitivity like this will be wrong, or this will cause harm, or this will be out of harmony. And there's the moment of really wanting to do it again, and there's the moment of pulling back, and then perhaps the greed or the anger or whatever gets so strong, we go ahead and we do it anyway. But in those cases, we reap the karmic fruit, or we experience the consequences of all those moments of pulling back as well as those moments of going for it. Those aren't lost. They don't disappear, and they're not forgotten. Delusion is considered a very powerful force in just that way. The question of whether we embrace our suffering wholeheartedly in the sense of succumbing to it, enhancing it, cultivating it, or if we learn to see the roots of it. If we don't pay attention, if we're not mindful because we're deluded, we're just disconnected, we're spaced out, because we're in that cloud, then what happens is that we get caught easily in categories out of the past. We act mechanically because we're not aware of what is actually going on in this moment. It's like we're caught in habit, and we live driven by these habits of mind. These habits range from the subtle to the gross and are often very funny. The story that we often tell is about when we first came to the Insight Meditation Society in Barrie, as we were considering it as a possible retreat center. As people encouraged us to try to begin a retreat center, we looked at a lot of different facilities in different towns and in different states. And one day, a friend brought us to IMS, to Barrie. We were walking around, and, you know, of course, those of you who've been there know it's quite big. It can be quite overwhelming. We got to a particular wing of the building, and Joseph, who had grown up in the Catskills, the Catskill Mountains of New York, where his family owned a resort, made the comment and said, "This wing looks like a hotel in the Catskills." It was really a joke. It was kind of funny. As it turned out, we did buy the place. We began the retreat center. We moved in. And a little while after we moved in, somebody was walking around trying to draw a map so that we wouldn't get lost every time we tried to find our way around. And they posted the map up on the bulletin board, and there it was in black and white, the Catskills. And I just started to laugh. I thought, it's a joke. It was a joke. That's ridiculous. Now it's got a name that's stuck. It's called the Catskills. 20 years later, what do you think it's called? It's called the Catskills. Somebody said to me a little while ago that they'd come to IMS for the first time to sit, and as people come for the first time, they're given a tour by one of the staff members. This person went on his tour, his designated tour, and he asked the staff member, "Why is this wing called the Catskills?" The staff member replied very seriously by saying, "It's called the Catskills because it's the wing that lies closest to the Catskill Mountains." And first of all, it's the wing that lies furthest away from the Catskill Mountains. But even apart from that, my friend told me this story, and I looked at him and I said, "Why in the world would we name a wing because of its proximity to the Catskill Mountains? It doesn't make any sense." But that's the absurdity of it all. A whole legend has now arisen that's gotten woven around the idea that, well, it must be called that for a reason, so what's the reason? That's what we do. Something happens, something arises, we cling to it, we become habituated to it, it becomes a reality, and then we find reasons for it to exist. We support it on and on. It's really very funny. The categories that we make in this way gain momentum. They gain momentum through time if we're not paying careful attention, until we have a situation that is very hard to see through. We feel trapped by the world we've created, and we don't even realize that we've created it. This is another factor of delusion. It's like we have this planet, we have the Earth. On a conceptual level, we say we have Europe. We used to say within Europe that we had East Germany and West Germany. But where was the line that the Earth recognized? There wasn't one. The planet wasn't bearing witness to some substantial real division. It was a concept or an idea. But we take that idea very seriously. This is a quotation from Richard Nixon, who said, "No power on earth is stronger than the United States of America today, and none will be stronger than the United States of America in the future." But do we know that? Is that really so? Even to look at the nature of our existence, we may not even be the last word in evolution either. Life hasn't stopped here. We have the feeling that this is it. This is the category that's final, is ultimate, is permanent. But the changing world that is constantly coming and going, with all of its ebbs and flows, is not the place to look for stagnation, to look for a solid kind of security, where we will be safe because we can control life's changes. This will never be so. This is delusion that seeks that. When we cling to a category, like East Germany or West Germany, we cling to a point of view, and we miss the incredible relativity of the universe, which is constantly, continuously arising and passing away. A particular action might be viewed by some people as being consistent, and other people might call it rigid. Something could be called soft by some people and could be called weak by other people. Something could be called quite frank by someone and called quite rude by someone else. There's an incredible array of feelings and thoughts and interpretations, a cascade within each one of us, let alone between us. And that's our world. I can remember years ago when I was first living in India, and I was quite sick. I was looking for a doctor. An Indian friend brought me to a certain doorway and showed me the sign outside the doorway, which said, "Dr. So-and-so, London University, MD, failed." And I thought, failed? I'm not going to a doctor who failed as MD. But from a certain perspective, from a certain culture, from a certain world, to get to medical school at all means that you're highly educated, that you're very competent, that you're literate. And the fact that you failed is barely relevant. We were looking at that doctor from very different worldviews. And our lives really are like that. There's incredible change and variety and mutability going on all of the time. there's a lot of openness, of spaciousness, a lot of ease, a lot of letting go, a lot of freedom in being able to see this. This is seeing clearly that this world is like a hall of mirrors in a way, without any substance that we can hold on to, that we can really identify with. Albert Einstein once said, "The splitting of the atom has changed everything except for how we think." And yet how we think and how we look at our lives and how we create reality is everything. It's all important. Delusion functions almost as a kind of narcotic in the mind, so that vital parts of our lives are missing. We can't touch them. We don't know what's going on. Because we don't know what's going on, we become afraid. Because we become afraid, we make something up. As we make it up, we get attached to it, and then we cling to it. It becomes real. It's all based upon nothing. This failure to see things as they actually are, to rest secure in our own perception of the truth, actually has very grave consequences. We can see this in the social manifestations of delusion, which expresses itself in things like buried secrets within a family system, like the arguments that are never mentioned or the fears that are never acknowledged, where things are just put aside. We just don't pay attention to them. A difficult truth, a difficult reality, some kind of suffering is sheltered by silence and alibis and denials. The deluded effect becomes collusion. It's maintained by either directing attention away from the difficulty or else repackaging the difficulty into a much more acceptable format. And so we end up with all of the kind of euphemisms that we have in society. We call an establishment the Golden Years Social Club or something like that. We call somebody a social drinker. We call them a stern disciplinarian. And there's really something else going on. We can live in this kind of self-deception and also in a shared illusion. Sometimes a group, like a family or a social system, a societal group of some kind, may implicitly or explicitly demand of its members that they sacrifice the truth to belong, to maintain a certain delusion. That's the test or the compulsion of belonging. The avoidance of seeing clearly, the delusion or the cloud, comes from our incredible need to belong, to preserve some sense of identity, either self-identity or group identity. How many times in a family do we see the denial of abuse that's actually going on because it's too unbearable to face? Anything that threatens our identity is something that gives rise to great anxiety. That's why we cut it off. That's why we don't want to see it. There was a time when the Air Force was considering building what were called GWEN towers, or ground wave emergency network towers, in the area of Barrie. And so we had a lot of town meetings about this. The purpose of the towers is to facilitate communication post-nuclear holocaust. One of our staff members wrote a letter to the editor of the local paper suggesting that perhaps the time to communicate is now, pre-nuclear holocaust, and not post-nuclear holocaust. You just imagine what's going through people's minds as they consider the technicalities of facilitating communication after such an event, completely overlooking the horror and the actual nature, what would be implied in a nuclear holocaust. When we feel good in our lives, when we feel comfortable, when we feel happy, that's when we tend to feel powerful. But often in that feeling of power, there's an element of delusion woven in as well. Because in that time of happiness, sometimes we need to pretend that there is no pain in this world. There's no change, that there won't be a time when this happiness will evolve into something else. We also don't want to believe at that time and we certainly don't want to face that there's pain for others. When we're feeling pain in life, when we're feeling suffering, then because of the force of delusion, we don't appreciate the power in that. We don't appreciate the significance of that. Often we feel helpless, as if we should be able to control it. It should not be happening, we say or we think. And this is delusion as well, this feeling that we should be able to control what arises. Actually, there's great power often in facing suffering and experiencing it clearly, because it cuts through all of the games that we can play in life, all of the pretense we can uphold, all of the legends that get woven about why things are the way that they are. Why is this wing called the Catskills after all? There's something very genuine and very fundamental about experiencing pain. So it can be very powerful. It's like going backstage in the theater a little bit, just suddenly seeing things from a radically different perspective. We go backstage in the theater and we realize how much of the effect was actually the costumes, the makeup, the lighting. That ability to go backstage and see clearly is the cutting edge that suffering can give us, so it can be quite powerful. The proximate cause, or the nearest arising condition, or the strongest force for non-delusion is called wise attention. It means being mindful. It means paying attention. Non-delusion has the characteristic of seeing things according to their true nature. We see happiness as happiness, vulnerable to change, and that's all right. We see suffering as suffering, not needing to repackage it, not needing to deny it. We see the great relativity of things as it actually exists, without needing to defend and manipulate according to our own rigidly held views. We see things according to their immediate nature. We see them according to the more ultimate nature, as always changing, being insubstantial, being unsatisfactory. The Thai monk Ajahn Chah talked about what it feels like to be lost in delusion. He said, "When we have no real home, we're like aimless travelers, out on the road, going this way for a while, then that way. Until we return to our real home, we feel ill at ease, whatever we are doing." To practice non-delusion, to practice wise attention, to practice mindfulness, means that we discover our real home in the quality of awareness we bring to every experience. This opens our minds to seeing all possibilities, to seeing clearly, to seeing in context, to seeing truly, and to seeing without being lost in the habits and rigid, fearful holdings of the past.